Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Deep Thoughts. Today is a beautiful Saturday morning after a little bit of sprinkling this morning, which cleared up the skies. The chemtrail planes are suddenly not flying. They're about to reach the point where they won't fly, but that's going to be in May, most likely. So I thought today we'd talk about something hopefully very constructive, because we say it all the time, which is saving humanity. I was going to say society, but I'm not sure there is one out there. So there's this weird moment when you go from looking at your own life, like we talk about a lot on the show, and your little halo of influence, perhaps your halo of reality, and when you start to take in that there is a whole nother, you know, group of reality out there potentially, which are all of your fellow humans, right? It's super windy today. My hair is going to be big hair day today. We haven't done a hair up episode in a while, so here we go. It's so windy out here. I'm hoping as the sun warms up the oxygen here, we're going to lose a little bit of this wind, but maybe not. So how do you approach such a thing? You know, you're like, Jesus, I want to do something. Well, the answer we all don't want to hear is the most effective thing you can do for society and humanity is to improve yourself. It really is the most intense change that you can affect on society is making sure that you have a balanced life. It doesn't mean tons of money, necessarily. That certainly can't hurt. It means that you are happy. As you experience the spectrum of emotions of sadness and happiness and all that, you've got methods of dealing with that spectrum in a way that doesn't negatively affect others. Your need to burden society with your presence is at an all-time minimum. Doesn't mean it's bad if you do ask for some help at all. It just means that, you know, you want to keep those for the moments when things go hot. And that's what society's there for, is to help each other, right? I mean, seriously, we talk about the program of the universe and that sort of thing, and you think, why would there be more than one of us? I mean, someone made the decision in the program to create more than one of everything. And, you know, and once you experience, again, any one objective with more than one person focused on that objective, it becomes measurably easier and the yields become exponentially higher. So working together is always the best way to do it. And that's why, you know, when you look within a nation state and you see politicians and all these evil scumbags like George Soros working to make everyone divided, right? And the funny thing is they pat themselves on the back and behind closed doors. Like they've actually accomplished something that had any difficulty to begin with. No. You know, getting people to argue over the reason why they don't have everything that they've dreamed that they wanted, that's easy. First, you get them hooked on pop culture, making them think they need Air Jordans, right? Making them think they need a fancy car or a fancy house or fancy watch, or they have to be able to eat at the fanciest restaurants or whatever, right? And then you make it exceptionally difficult through banking for them to ever achieve or acquire any of those things, and they're pissed. As soon as that they get strung out on this ridiculous drug and they can't get it, then they're angry. And then you just go scapegoat. You pop the balloon. It's not one of these balloons that completely explodes. It's one that, you know, starts letting out a leak. It starts flying all over the place, and as it's flying all over its life, every single thing the balloon bumps into is what it's supposed to blame. Doesn't matter. It could be one race against itself, one race against another race. Doesn't matter. A gender thing. If we were all happy, all this stuff that we argue over would be very difficult to cause an argument moving forward, you know? One thing that's interesting that I think I've noticed is that I struggle with the concept that suffering creates growth. You know, that every world war that we have allowed these bankers to create from nothing, getting our ancestors killed, getting our ancestors maimed. At every single tragedy like that, there are moments that are beautiful that come out of those horrible pre-orchestrated things. And it's not something that is easy to digest. You know, I made an analogy a long time ago when I was writing a book, a fictional book about the devil. I was going to church at the time. I was inside a youth group. And the guy that actually brought me to that church, he said, I said, does the devil really exist? And he goes, well, what do you mean? I said, well, think about it. We had just had the 89 earthquake. And I said, think about the earthquake. I said, as horrible as when the highway fell and killed something like 100 plus people up there in the Bay Area. I said, when that highway fell, a bunch of people rushed up to hopefully, you know, to help rescue people. I said, don't you think that during somewhere in that earthquake recovery experience, a couple met each other, right? A husband and wife met each other, and they're not just going to mess around for a little while. They're going to mess around, you know, they're going to stay married for their whole lives, have a bunch of kids, and live a happy life. And when they're asked how they met, they're going to say the earthquake. So I said, you know, one person's demise is another person's amazing benefit. And he, right there in front of me, goes, oh my God, never looked at it that way. And then he starts looking to the, he's an elder. He was like in his late 20s, and he looks to the other guy and he goes, isn't that right? You know, yeah, he's right. Blah, 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 blah. And he goes, 2 days later, he was like, I don't believe in the devil anymore. And that totally pissed off the pedophile who was running the place, soon to be pedophile. But the big question is, if wars do create these amazing heroes and these events where people find out what they're really made out of, right? You got this kid, you know, who's a pimple-faced, skinny, scrawny kid. He's 18 years old, has not really had much parenting. And there's a war started, and he plays a lot of video games. So he goes and gets recruited, and somehow he passes basic training, puts some muscle on him. He's now being told what to do, which is all he's ever wanted, is to be told what to do. Now, he would rather have been told what to do every day of his life. So at 18, he'd have some other destiny besides fighting in a war. But now it feels good. It feels good. Like, it, you know, being told what to do is sort of like being cared for, because metaphorically in your mind, it's all about the Mother Goose algorithm, right? If you're being told what to do and you follow the rules, then you no longer worry about breaking the rules, breaking the law, ending up in jail. So the kid goes off to war, and he does the Hacksaw Ridge thing. He rescues 75 people in one night off the top of some ridge in, Okinawa or something, right? And you say, that kid would never have done that had a war not been created. And so now we have this hero that we're proud of, that the town's proud of. His tombstone's, you know, always cleaned off and decorated. Other kids look up to him. Later, a movie's made about the guy, and we all kind of, you know, size ourselves up and try to become more of a man. Stop bitching and moaning. Well, motherfucker. A war made all those good things happen, didn't it? No one wants to admit that. So what are your alternatives? Okay, well, I know exactly what they are. There's really one discipline that will provide a beautiful alternative, and that's to get educated. Get educated. Go read a book. Learn something. What's very interesting is that we know here on planet Earth and our species, you know, sex feels good because whoever created us knew that if it didn't feel good, we would be extinct. We wouldn't procreate. And so he made it feel so good and made it so easy to figure out that we just accidentally got each other's pregnant, you know. You know, we watch these monkeys hang out in the jungle, and man, they just screw 24/7, right? Well, there's something else that feels pretty much like sex. And that is the act of creationism. And again, if you think about the universe as a bunch of transparent, you know, unseeable algorithms, it's pretty damn interesting to know that when you push through your brain, your soul, creation. Whether it be you fantasizing about it in your brain before you bring it to fruition, or you actually taking your thumb and pushing it down a big lump of clay, the act of creating feels amazing. Now, there's also this interesting thing of the act of acquiring knowledge feels good. And I want you to slow it down in your system, because it is that good. How many times have you tried to do something, you can't get it done? Go on YouTube, you look up exactly what you're trying to do, and I'll be goddamn, there's not a video right there that says this is how you do it. And you realize that the way you were approaching it was completely wrong. And the way when you learned how to do it, it felt so damn good, because now you're in control. The second you get to charge money for what you know, oh man, that's an extra boner. It's a weird thing when you get paid to do something that you know how to do that to you is not hard at all. There's something very special about that. So here's what we were supposed to do with society, what we used to do with society, out of sheer pressure by standards that we used to set for our kids. And here's what we do today, which is an interesting adjustment. There used to be bars, like lines in the sand, I should say, from zero to death. And society expected from you a level of participation. Otherwise, society would start to notice you and frown upon you and kick your ass in one way or the other. You know, back in the 1800s, the average level of education was 8th grade. And consequently, again, before you say, oh, those poor, dumb people, they knew around 10,000 words in the English language on average. Which, again, is why historians have to translate, you know, Civil War letters written home. You know, we were Shakespearean in the way that we used to speak and write back in the day. And we've become more ignorant and more ignorant. But I guarantee you, a boy by the age of 14 was expected to be doing a hell of a lot of work at home. They're expected to get jobs in the town if they weren't working directly for their family, running a farm or something. Or a family business. The girls were, you know, getting ready to start families, and they were learning how to cook and sew and work farms just like the guys. And I really, really doubt they were as dainty as we might put on. You know, it's not a Little House on the Prairie situation. The Ellie Mays of the world were everywhere. Because they had to be. They absolutely had to be. And the more intense the career, like a brothel career, the more tough they had to be. That's why they look tough. Look at those old photographs. But here's the thing. By setting the standard in the 1800s of having to get your shit together by your early teens, let's just say, be prepared. Be prepared to conquer everything that life has to offer and that life requires and that society requires and that your family requires in your early teens. You could not sit around on your ass getting fat, watching, you know, fucking TV and playing video games. You just couldn't. And you were conditioned from birth. Like I always say, the Midwest tends to condition their kids from birth to know that they've got chores, that they've got things they've got to do, stuff they have to learn. And, you know, until probably the 90s, where you, again, you have a lot of, you have the internet that blows up, you've got video games that really, really blow up. It was easy for a Midwest family to control their children. Now it's really tough. But what's happened now? You could take a kid, pluck them right out of the 1850s in a decent area of the country where he did get near his 8th grade education. And you could bring him to this year, 2017, and say, okay, you're 15 years old. You know how to do all that stuff. At 18, you're going to have to go to college, and you have to know what you want to do. The kid from the 1800s is going to have a much better opportunity because he's going to go, yeah, well, I know how to do all these different things. I'll just spend the next 3 years getting even better and learn some new stuff from your timetable. And then when it comes to 18, I've got choices, not just one thing that I choose. But in today's age, what happens? In today's age, we force kids to choose their major when they get into four-year universities. Very few of them have any hobbies, right? Their hobbies have been goofing off. Their hobbies have been satiating some relationship online, thinking they've got hundreds and hundreds of friends when they only know about half a dozen people, and one of them's their mom. So the first answer of how we fix society is you. You have to find your balance. And of course, it's a battle every single day. Understand that. If you're able to develop a methodology that serves you decade after decade after decade, and you are completely content with that, and you know you're being productive in society, you're the master. You won the lottery, perhaps. Or you're just a genius. And I know a few people like this, I think. At least they put on a good show when I go talk to them. But for the rest of us, as we evolve who we are and our perception of reality, our needs and our wants change. Typically, our wants go down and our needs go down. We learn to live with less without sacrificing any happiness at all. As a matter of fact, it usually is the inverse relationship. The more you become enlightened, which just is, it's really your definition of increasing your perception, causality effects in the universe, you realize that the pop culture that you've been sold is unnecessary. If you want anything, it's probably wanting a less is more solution for your life. So the second tier, as I've been alluding to, is our kids. If you are a kid, for whatever reason, which I'd be like 18 or below, you have to get hobbies. But you have to teach your kids how to have hobbies. And in my experience, your kids are going to be way different than everyone else's kids. It's best to fill the house with the tools that could facilitate a hobby and don't mention it to your children. Just leave them lying around. If you want them to dabble in art, you just buy the art supplies and have them in the house. In fact, if you want to really entice them, just kind of give the, don't tell them that it's not, that they're not allowed to use them, because some kids will just follow the rules, but just kind of make it seem like this is your stuff and, you know, there it is. Maybe you do amazing things with those instruments right in front of their face and they'll want to follow you. There's this really sweet spot under 10 years old that most kids have, which is about 2 to 3 years where they are the most amazing, cute, interactive, totally interested in what you're doing child. And then there's that line where they cross, where pop culture starts invading their brains from the television that you've got on, from the internet that you've got piped through their cell phones that they have to have as soon as they can hold one. And every single second that they consume of pop culture into your mind, into their mind, excuse me, peels them away from you. Now, there is a rite of passage. A child will eventually start rejecting, especially the parent of the same sex, but eventually both parents, because it's not to be feared on any level. What it's about is the strength of your gene pushing through. Your gene is saying, I should be making my own decisions. And it's based on millennia of moments when that was forced on them, or it was simply the genetic trigger that says, start doing your own shit. It's natural. And the more you know that it's coming, the more you'll deal with it. You'll deal with it as a young person, if you're listening. You'll know why you want to do this, and you maybe cut your parents a little bit of slack. Or if you are the parent, you won't shit yourself so bad. But let's keep going, because we're talking about sort of saving humanity. As I have alluded to and put on point several times in this show, something I feel is absolutely paramount for us to do is to be genuine to each other. And what is that? Well, it doesn't mean you're going to like everything I say. It doesn't mean we're going to agree on everything. Okay, and if just use me as an example of every other person you know in society. We don't have to agree. In fact, we can yell at each other, right? It doesn't matter. In the end, as long as I understand that you're genuine, I can shake your hand and give you a hug when it's all over. It's just a debate. I'll respect you the entire time we're having this disagreement because I'm looking at you being genuine back to me, and there's nothing better than that. We just got to keep it from escalating, you know, too far. But I'm going to tilt back into something you've heard me say several times, and it's about us rejecting people who are disingenuous. Now, there are light forms of people being disingenuous that is merely a sort of almost an interaction, a rapport, a salutation that we have with each other, and it's not to be frowned upon. It's just to be noticed, which is you go to the local department store and you meet people and you're feeling great, man. You got a good parking space, got money in your pocket, and you're going to buy some toilet paper. And you go inside and you're like, hey, man, I got some time on my hands. Probably some other stuff I need in this store. And you bump into people in the aisles, you know, they need to get out of your way. Oh, sorry. Oh, excuse me. Oh, you know, hey. And then you go talk to, you know, people who work there, clerks. Well, you know, where are the tampons? And you have this persona, this sort of outward persona, which isn't exactly who you are. But you feel good. You're just putting on a nice persona to create a big, giant, fluffy, comfy cushion between you and another person because you don't know how other people would react to your true personality. And so we put on that super nice personality. I do it. Now, you don't want to take it too far. It's just a little tiny veneer on who you were. It usually comes off pretty fast when someone's dragging ass in the checkout line, right? Like, oh my God. But the disingenuous nature that we want to really get rid of comes from our politicians. People who claim to be bringing us the news. I made a comment the other day about Paul Watson from PrisonPlanet.tv, which is an Alex Jones franchise. He does fantastic journalism, just A-plus work. And he was sort of adopting sort of a broadcast speak. He had his own kind of Wolf Blitzer frequency. And I said something in an episode a couple months ago about that. And I watched him last night at my smoke lounge, and he was talking normal. And it was so pleasant. It was so pleasant. It's like my friend, you know, instead of someone, you know, separating themselves from me. I thought that was great. So where do we take that? We take people talking to us in this robotic, disingenuous voice and forget any validation by a broadcast degree, right? You can take broadcast journalism in college and they will teach you something called broadcast speak. Now, part of it is to erase whatever accent you have to increase the level of accessibility, which means the ability for people to understand what you're saying, right? So if you were in some Cockney accent area of England and someone's reporting the news, well, it'll work for people that understand the accent, but it'll be tough for everyone else. If you're in Scotland, it'll be tough for Americans, right? If you're in the Deep South, you know, everyone will fall asleep. So broadcast speak in one level is to balance out your accent and sort of just come to an average mean of how we pronounce words. But the second part of it is all of this emotional delivery is what they're trying to do. They're trying to create these suspenseful tension and release formulas within what they're reporting to keep you on the hook. And it is the most patronizing fucking thing you've ever heard in your life, right? I won't do my impersonations. But listen to Wolf Blitzer speak. That guy is a goddamn robot. He lacks any level of humanity. He cannot speak correctly. He can't. I mean, I make jokes all the time about what would it be like to be at Thanksgiving dinner with him. We cannot allow things like that to be validated in our society as being, this is where real information comes from a fucking robot. You know, someone who just talks to you in bizarre tones and, you know, if it's any different than how you would talk to someone in the department store in terms of just, hey, you know, like, where is that thing? Oh, that's great. Awesome. Anything different than that? You got to really put the brakes on. We all know that society needs to wake up, right? We need to wake up to the fact that there are these horrible, horrible techniques that especially the press has learned to get away with murder, right? Literally. You know, the events of 9/11 were very interesting. On a scientific level, again, you have 11,000 engineers and architects who have come out and said, you know, that the day's events are actually technically impossible. Technically impossible. All right. But the press won't cover anything that they've done. Only Geraldo Rivera finally brought the leader of that Engineers and Architects for 9/11 Truth to his show, and then he apologized to the guy for being a doubter of the inside job theory, and then his show was off the air immediately. Geraldo Rivera had to go off and become sort of this adjunct to normal shows, right? But what the press does and what the ruling class does is say, look, we have personally convinced society to believe Wolf Blitzer when it comes to what is true in the world. And what I mean by that is a broadcast journalist's voice. Outside of him, we have first newspapers, the New York Times, LA Times, Wall Street Journal. Those are the only things that are true. We got magazines like the New Yorker. If you need any more detailed information, we have the bookstores that have the publishers that will only publish books that correlate with all the other theories that these other venues put out. Of course, there's internet news and television news, right? But they all work together. They're all owned by the same corporations, all plugged into AP Reuters, which is the same Rothschild company. So what they'll do is they'll bring on someone like Dr. Stephen Jones from Brigham Young University, who cracked the explosives that were placed inside the 9/11 buildings, the thermite and thermate. And they have a 6-minute segment for him to cover all the evidence of 9/11, which right there is a joke. They barrel over the guy talking so he doesn't get any word in edgewise. He's not a very assertive person. He's very polite, so he doesn't speak when he's being talked on top of. So out of a 6-minute segment, he might get to speak 30 seconds. And of course, it's riddled with what other institutions that we accept as truth have backed up what you're claiming. Oh, no one? Oh, well then you're obviously a liar. And all the cowardice souls at home who don't want to believe it's an inside job. In fact, they want to believe everyone dies at all the massacres. That's what makes them sleep well at night. They don't want to hear any of us say, yeah, a bunch of those people didn't die. And some of those events, some of them they did. But they don't want to wake up and have any responsibility in life because they've never had any their entire life. So they don't want to hear us, right? Think about being on some sort of town hall meeting with Neil deGrasse Tyson. And you want to argue against one of the subjects that he might preach. Maybe it's the Big Bang. Maybe it's a picture of Earth from space, a.k.a. the shape of the Earth, which he's lamented about recently, all right? And you sit there and you present your case, and it's beautiful and it works. What you're saying is what matches reality. And then he says, to defend his institutionalized education, well, what's your proof? Well, I just told you. No. What institution that I subscribe to, having hidden in the universities nearly my entire life, what institution backs you up? What scientific experiment by an institution backs you up? And the audience is going to immediately fragment. I think in today's society, 60 to 70% would stay with us. But a good 30% will say, yeah, I don't want to believe that the world sucks or that people lie. I want to believe that NASA's been robbing me 365 times 60 million a year. I don't want to believe that. And so they'll use whatever technique they possibly can to worm out of the truth. And this is the process of waking up. Now, of course, there are forces that know that we're waking up using an online backbone to do it. And so what have they done? They've got all kinds of disinfo folks out there. Some folks that put their face out there and they're creating all kinds of videos, misleading everyone, right? Now, again, we all run the risk of misleading people in these videos. If you make a bunch of videos and you're talking about a lot of stuff and you're trying to figure out the truth, the problem is that you'll be wrong. You don't even know it. You just have a hunch, right? That's why I try to say, look, this is my opinion of everything. But you can only say that so many times in episodes before people just turn the channel off, because you just go, ooh, it's gross, man. He constantly talks about how I need to do my own research and da-da-da-da-da. Well, it is the truth. But for any of you who have attempted to change someone else's opinion, you know right away that's the most difficult thing to do. And you probably know also that very quickly in that process, it is the least likely thing that you'd want to do. When you feel all of the acidic emotions of someone fighting you, when you've done a bunch of research, they haven't done any, and they won't agree to do any research in what you're saying at all. It's almost as if up to that point, you guys have been really good friends, family members, whatever, and you'd be willing to trust each other with anything. And at that moment, they show you that no matter how much they like you, there are certain subjects that they simply will not believe. And it doesn't mean we're right just because we're talking to them, but there are a lot of things that are fairly black and white. And you don't have exactly the reason why something occurs, and you don't necessarily know exactly how things are accomplished, right? You might be watching a magic trick with a friend at some Vegas show, and you see something on stage and you're like, oh my gosh, well, that couldn't be the way that that was done because that's physically impossible. So he's got some other neat thing he's doing that's really awesome, and you share that, and then the person's like, yeah, yeah, I wonder how he did that. Because that's a fun subject. But when it comes to negative stuff, again, in my Waking Up episode in season one, I talk about the threshold of pain in your brain, which keeps you from wanting to have certain conversations, certain thought processes in your mind. And again, the ruling class of this world prey on that. David Rockefeller kind of referred to it in a 1979 press corps dinner, where he said, as long as what we do is so dark that society doesn't want to think about it, then we win. Something to that effect. And he was completely correct if he said that. But now let's go just a tad bit deeper here, because there are forces at play that we don't acknowledge a lot, because what I've talked about so far is sort of an organic nature to the events of our lives, right? I'm talking about sort of, you know, waking up and experiencing life and figuring out things, figuring out you've been lied to, passing the information around, trying to get your kids on the right track with hobbies. All that's pretty organic. Disinfo, which we talked about a few seconds ago, that is less organic. That is more intentional on your system. But now let's pull the camera up a little bit. Let's look at society in more of a 80,000 foot view. Right? You can almost see an entire country from that height. Almost. Well, what if you could freak out an entire country all at the same time? They used to do it all the time. In the 50s, it was the nuclear scare. They do a lot of nuclear tests. They published them on television. Then there was all kinds of fictional stuff on television about what would happen if nuclear bombs got to be, you know, the normal way we fought war. Then there's that wild card jihadist who's willing to smuggle in a nuclear weapon. All right. And, you know, you think that that's how acidic it has to be to scare society. And then you remember swine flu. You remember E. coli scares with, you know, was it, you know, chopped scallions. Mad cow disease. Ebola. Zika virus. I mean, it goes on and on and on, right? Methods to scare society completely. Again, once you're terrified, which I think few of us really are, especially people who watch this show, but you know, the people around you. Once they're terrified, they don't have access to their full faculties in their brain. Again, go see my left brain, right brain episode, season one, and pay attention to the fight or flight area of that video where I talk about how your blood supplies to your brain constrict. Shutting down your right brain, reducing your left brain to pure logic so you can get the hell out of Dodge and survive, right? One of the most beautiful things about waking up society is that they don't panic so badly. And panic is where they get to do a lot of nasty stuff to us. That's where they get the few, to, or so the many to rule the few, right? You could be completely awake and you get pushed around by society. Now, right now, we're fairly loosely packed within the United States of America. What I mean by that is, and when you're tightly packed, you sort of have this situation, if you've ever been in a crowd that's really, really dense, and the crowd moves, and there you have no choice but to walk where they walk and get pushed where they push you. A friend of mine went to Mardi Gras, and he was downtown, I think Bourbon Street, and he said that the crowd got so dense and so packed that my buddy, who's probably about 180 to 190 pounds, got compressed between other people's torsos, and he said he was lifted off the ground, and he was moved about a block and a half down the street without touching his feet to the ground. That's sort of what I'm talking about in a metaphorical sense of how you are allowed to behave in society. Think about countries where, like North Korea, all the little Vice videos and people that have penetrated North Korea and done documentaries, when they ask them questions about their leader, when they ask them questions about what they'd rather be doing for a living, 1 in 100 interviews has a guy that's willing to say, well, I'd rather be this than this, than what I am, right? But everyone is so terrified to piss off that leader that they go along and they start speaking the state's, you know, propaganda. America and Americans always say, well, that would never happen here. A gentleman actually just walked around Germany in some major city. It was Berlin, I think. Pretty sure it was Berlin. But he walked around and he was a British documentary guy, and he just asked people what they thought of Merkel, who's the head of the EU. And probably about 70% of the people, just immediately their face is like, I hate her. You know, she's destroying our country. She's destroying Europe. But the other 30%, you watch them, and maybe like 5% actually believe the positive comments that they were saying, but a good 25% of them look scared to have been interviewed, to be caught saying something against Merkel. And so you saw their face go to, I hate her. And then they turned and they started answering the question that, you know, they just blathered and really didn't make any good, strong points supporting her. Having a lot of German friends and family members, I will tell you that the Prussian education system, which you'll hear me mention if you haven't researched that yourself, it's really a system that was created, gosh, like 750 years ago or so, which is to train the citizens of a nation to follow what the nation needs and not what you need. Which, on the surface, is great. You're like, well, yeah, we are stronger as a group than we are as individuals. But it's immediately corrupted. It's immediately, you know, turning everyone into little subservient, serfdom, docile human beings that have very little capability besides left-brain regiments. Engineering. Why do you think engineering is so good in Germany? Because that's what's allowed after you get conditioned by Prussian education systems. You're not really free. You really don't think for yourself. Now, Berlin today is probably the greatest place to think for yourself and be a DJ and create credible art and shows and all kinds of stuff. But for the most of Germany, everyone that I know, you know, it's a little odd. A friend of mine just dated a German, and she said he was weird. And I said, why? I knew what she was going to say. And she goes, they're just strange. They don't have, like, they're either super over-emotional, sort of sick romantics, or it's all black and white. Everything's all black and white. I was like, yeah. So I think one of the greatest things that my own personal life can attest to, is having, you know, mainly a German background in my family, and then coming to America and having my brain freed, having my brain never be repressed by a Prussian education system, it shows you what that gene pool could do if they were just released from this obediency that they have, this national pride that they have. But it happens in America too, right? When there's one of these, you know, either fake or real massacres in the world, what happens on Facebook? Well, they rush right in with this little overlay you can put on your profile pic. And then there's this social pressure to do it to your profile pic. Otherwise, you don't care about the people that may or may not be dead. You know, if you ever study why people go to jail, at least in America, one thing will become extremely apparent very quickly. And that is, and this is a key to saving society and saving humanity, and it, you know, it's going to differ for different regions of the world, so I'll leave it up to those of you who live in different parts of the world. But if you were to take out pop culture influences out of every single prisoner's history, I'm going to tell you that you will remove over 95, if not 99% of every prisoner that's in jail. Why are they in jail? Well, they had their lives destroyed by pop culture, meaning that they were told to attain things. Their want list got so huge, and they got their want list and their need list confused with each other, right? They think they need Air Jordans. They think they need, you know, a hat that costs $200. They need these things. Otherwise, society will reject them, right? Because that's what pop culture says. So when they try to get it or they can't get it, either they might steal to get it, or they feel bad because they can't get it. And once they feel bad over and over and over again, there's real financial repression in the world. But before you get to the bankers fucking with your ability to get a job, make a decent wage, and get good education, before you even get to that, you're all strung out, living with your parents who are paying all the bills for you. Strung out on everything pop culture. If you really come down to your needs, you can always find those. Those that are in for rape, think about it. Rape has two elements to it, right? It has an obsession with sex, which is usually the lesser formula of why rape happens. And so you have someone who is oversexed with all the pornographic material online. I mean, come on. If you were to look at society and go in every back room of every novelty store in 1975, and then you just search on Google for XXX content, I don't know what the exponential is, but it must be a million, if not a billion times more material today than there was just 40 years ago. It's sick. But what's the other big thing they tell you about rape? People want control. They love controlling someone, taking something that that person doesn't want to give you, and being in control and being a god and being a king or whatever the fuck you think you're doing, right? And why is that? Why does someone want that sort of control? It's because society as a whole is so messed up. And it's not necessarily us as individuals, but it's all the power structures and you know, lattice work that holds up our lives. That they don't have control anywhere else in their lives. They don't have all the possessions. And because, you know, whatever you're attracted to, let's just say, that sex also thinks you need those possessions, otherwise they won't give you the time of day, and so you can't get the sex that you want, you can't get the control that you want, so oh my gosh, there's a rape. You get them both, and you take them. And even if someone says, hey man, you're going to go to jail for the rest of your fucking life, the guy's like, well, at least one time in my life, I felt like I was in control. Drugs. Why do you take drugs? It's because life sucks, right? It's the only reason to do it. Makes you feel better. And you could have a micro feeling of life sucks because I'm in college and tests are hard. Maybe someone broke your heart. Maybe it's just you can't figure out what the hell you're supposed to do in life. And so this just makes time pass, right? Some people sell drugs because they can't find a talent because their parents didn't raise them with hobbies, right? Hobbies don't cost shit. I grew up a poor fucking kid, man. Right? when we had what we needed, but I certainly didn't have everything I wanted, and I filled those gaps by learning shit. And learning became orgasmic, man. You know, as a child, once you learn that you know things adults don't know, because they don't study anything either, you start to feel like you have some value as a human being really early in life, right? The reason why nerds do so well in life, at least academically and usually employment-wise, is that they get off on education just as much as most of us get off, you know, with sex. And I think that the day of having a pure nerd and a pure jock is over. I mean, they still exist in their pure forms, but we have a lot of hybrids now. Right? Murder. Being so pissed off that you kill another human being. One of the other famous reasons why people are in jail. Well, within a marriage, within a relationship, what causes a relationship to fall apart? Well, it's money, it's infidelity, which turns into betrayal. Pop culture even tells you how to respond when these things happen to you, right? I've said it several times on the show. The couples that, you know, if someone says, well, if he ever cheats on me, man, it's over. I'll never be able to trust that person again, and whatever. The amount of couples I know that have pulled through those situations and lived happily ever after is, well, for all that can pull through it, they typically do live happily ever after, because after that, what's left? What could possibly be worse than that? Minus some super extreme situation, right? What's interesting is I've got a couple friends of mine who have taught or still teach in these more rural areas where kids have really bad neighborhoods and they have really bad classes with kids that just don't give a shit whether or not they're there or not. And when you slow down the dynamic of what's going on in that classroom, you've got a bunch of kids that won't pay attention to the teacher. And usually, you don't go much deeper than that. You know, you just kind of go, well, these kids are broken, they have broken parents, everyone's ignorant at home, so they're ignorant too, and that's the reason why this class isn't coming together. That's why they won't learn anything. But when you take the pop culture element, and you know, you look through the pop culture filter, and you look at everyone in the classroom, the spectrogram of who's strung out on this shit more than ever, the kids that aren't paying attention are on, you know, 100%. All they can think about sitting in that class is some pop culture thing. And what's really interesting about it is they believe they have so much street smarts, they don't need your academic smarts. And the funny thing is that the irony is that the street smarts that they believe they have is merely a refined addiction to pop culture. They are being had more than anyone else in the room. But they believe in their heart of hearts that they're not being had. They're not a sucker, right? But they are. They're absolutely the sucker of all suckers, man. When I was a kid, there was a very interesting thing that happened in my hometown. I've alluded to it several times, but I think I can put it in better words today on the subject of saving humanity. When I was young, the people that I admired the most were the people that were the coolest cats in the universe, right? The calmest females, the calmest males. Whether they be in their teens or in their 80s. And there was an attribute about them. There's two things about them that I love. That, you know, well, above being just cool and relaxed. And the reason why they achieve that calm state of being is because of these other two attributes. One, whatever they did for a living, they knew their shit. And they knew it really, really well. If they were a farmer, they knew everything about farming. And I mean everything. They knew how to grow every single crop. Whether or not they'd ever grown cotton before, because it doesn't grow in their area or whatever, they knew everything about it. So that's the first attribute. The second attribute was that they had learned how to teach what they had learned. Because the person who taught them in a very clever way, a very human-to-human way, not inside of a classroom with books. And so it's that mentor, you know, that master that you're an apprentice of. So if you want to learn how to fix a car, in my hometown, seriously, if your father wasn't going to do it, which my dad fixed cars in front of me my whole life, but if you were just stuck there and you just made a decision, you're 14 years old and you're like, God damn it, I want to know how to fix cars. It just turns me on. You would look at the car repair places in the town. My town was a township. And you'd walk in the front door of the biggest garage door that's open. You'd find an old guy who's working on a car. And as a little tiny kid, you'd walk up and say, hey, mister, you need any help? And the guy would look at you and say, you know, why do you ask? You know, or something like that. And you'd say, well, I want to learn how to fix cars. And he'd look you up and down and kind of see kind of what you're capable of doing, right? If you're a big kid at 14, you might have you go out and do salvage yard work. If you're more scrawny, he might have you go grab the tools for a little while. And as every tool comes to the engine, he's showing you what he's doing. You know, as he disassembles, an engine to replace the head or something. And you just sit and you'd watch how everything connects together. And slowly, over the course of a couple of years, between the age of 14 and 16, you start learning causality, right? The amount of friends I had in the Midwest that by the age of 15, 16 years old, who knew how to break an engine completely down, you know, you have all the sheets and the grass and every goddamn parts out there on the sheets, all fucking grimed up, and they could put that thing back together flawlessly, better than it was when it was first delivered. It was in the dozens. And I remember, because I was off doing science and programming and art, I remember thinking, how the hell did you learn all this? I got friends of mine that didn't have fathers. And by 16, they still knew how to disassemble a car. Not only that, they knew how to do body work. Flawless body work. By 18 years old. That is an art. You have to have equipment to do that kind of work. You know, it's not just putty and some spray paint cans. It's an art. And they learned it. But what happens in modern day society? What kid has a reason to be bored in this society when they got a cell phone? None of them. When Jiffy Lube came out, a place that changes your oil here in America, I'm sure you got them in Europe too. As soon as that facility came out, they lobbied with politicians in each individual state. Some of them succeeded, some of them didn't, but they said that you changing your own oil was going to run the risk of massive fines if you spilled the oil, you know, which didn't happen very often, by the way. We all knew how to put a pan underneath the car. I used to change my oil up until my second car. But each individual service that was offered to us removed that capability from us. Cars have been re-engineered such that you can't just do it by yourself. You used to be able to replace your spark plugs in 2 seconds. You could get the spark plug socket, get your wrench, you could pull that son of a bitch out and put a new one in. By my second car, it was under an injection manifold. I had to take the manifold off. You need a whole suite of tools to take that off. Well, then apartments were the way we started living. We didn't live in homes. And so you didn't have any place to put a big tool chest, right? You'd have to carry a pretty big tool chest in the back of your car. No one's going to do that. So you just pay someone else to do it. It removes our knowledge of how to manage our own lives. And those are just crude examples. Again, I've said it a couple times in episodes. When you used to buy a computer in the 80s, you turned it on and there was a cursor blinking. And if you wanted to tell that computer what to do, you had to know something about computers. Well, with the GUI interface that went on top of it, and obviously we like these advancements, but I'm just making examples. The world became a bunch of consumers, not, you know, users, engineers. So I think one of the things we could do for our society is become a little bit more involved with our worlds, a little bit more knowledgeable. You know, there, no matter how different this next example is for each one of us, there's a truth in it, and that is this. Every single one of us, especially the older that you get, when you realize you have limited time to do anything off the beaten path of your need structure, we have a line in the sand in our brain which says, this is all I need to know, or this is all I should know about the world in order to live in it. And the problem with that is that it keeps getting moved. And sort of the objective with a lot of folks is to say, I want to know as little as possible and get the maximum amount out of life. That should ring as an oxymoron in your mind. I know that a few of you listening to me have tech phobia. If you don't personally, you know people that do, that are right next to you. And what I mean by that is that you open a laptop, something that's been around for 20 plus years, and people will start trembling at the keyboard. Hell, it could just be the keyboard on a desktop computer. And they have to do something. Oh my God, they have to install some software. And they just seize up. Because in their brain, they never had to know this until just now, right? And you'll find people's computers with web browsers that are 10, 15 years old and they can't run anything and they're calling you up to help them. And you're like, download Chrome for Christ's sake. Download something. It's all free, man. Well, how do I do that, you know? You'll have people that call you and ask you very basic questions about life, about how to solve certain technical problems here and there, and they don't realize that they could just get on their cell phone, go into Google, type the question that they're calling you for, and right there is the answer. The very first thing that comes up in the Google search is the answer to their question, plus a bunch of details, plus a list of instructions they can use to do whatever that is they need to do, how to change a goddamn light bulb. I mean, YouTube is one of the most amazing utilities in the world with what you need to know how to do. Case in point, 2 days ago, a buddy of mine needs to replace his headlight in his car. He goes and buys the bulb. He brings it home, pops his hood. Now, he's replaced the light bulb in several cars prior to this one. It's a Yaris. And he's thinking quite clearly that you should be able to pop the hood, reach around the side, you know, get your arm in there, and pull that light bulb assembly out, replace the bulb, push it back in, you're good. And he kept fucking around with this thing. It's really late at night. And I'm like, it's dark. And I'm like, look, let's get on YouTube. And he was like, no, I don't want to get on YouTube. Like he's failing as a man or something, right? If you can't replace a light bulb in a car. And I said, look, man, you better look on YouTube because, you know, when I tried to replace one of my old car, I had to go underneath the wheel well and pull the wheel well, you know, cover out and reach up inside there. And there's a washer that gets stuck in there and it fucks up the next bulb. Bah, bah, bah. All right. He won't do it. So we go inside, and he can't figure out how to do it. After 15 minutes, we go inside. I pull it up on my phone. I found the same exact car, and we're looking. And the guy shows you in the video, you have to disassemble the front of the car. There's all these little clips you have to pop out, and the whole front bumper has to come off, and you have to pull the whole light assembly out with two screws, and then you can get to the light bulb. But you have to unplug four other light bulb connections. And then you can do the light bulb, and then you plug it all back in, push it back in, snap the hood back into place, or snap the front bumper back into place, and the quarter panel back into place, and the wheel well back into place. We have to be okay with getting educated about how this world works, right? Now, before we close up, let's talk about just a few of the basics that people don't know anything about, which is funny because they'll get on Facebook and they become these foreign policy experts. They become these economic experts. People need to know how money is created in this world. They do. I got a whole money episode you can go take a look at in season one. But they have to understand fractional reserve banking. They have to understand that, at least in America, we have surrendered through the 16th Amendment, through the Federal Reserve banking system, back to these fuckheads in Europe. These cartel bankers that have nothing to do with the European people, they're slaves to it as well, that we're asking them to make fake money for us. You have to know that. Everyone needs to know that we don't need foreign agencies making our money and charging us interest for that money. Interest that never is created, by the way. It's a very intense, it's the most pure Ponzi scheme you've ever seen in history. They need to know that. In terms of foreign policy, well, your best bet is to show them how each and every war since the Revolutionary War for Americans was an instigated war that was designed for Europe to take over America, and they won. Once the 16th Amendment got put in place in 1913, every war after that's been a big banker loan war. Maybe World War II was about developing Hitler to keep Stalin out of Europe, but that was about it. Korean War was a joke. We didn't need to be there. It was a police action. The Vietnam War was Korea on steroids. The war lasts over 10 years. Then we got a reprieve, and the world was awesome. From 1975 to 85, America has rarely experienced a more blissful era in its history. You know, of course, the War of 1812 was about getting rid of the first Federal Reserve, and then they threatened us, fought us. We were on our knees after having fought the Revolutionary War, and the only thing that stopped that war is that we gave them another lease on their Federal Reserve Bank. It was called a different name. The Civil War, well, it was about the trying to rip apart America, right? Europe funds the South, and we ended up tearing the place apart. But the main byproduct out of the Civil War was the invention and certification of a corporation, allowing a business entity, a piece of paper, to have as much rights as a human. And that's where you got, you know, the conversion to corporatism started. People need to understand the link between selling of a barrel of oil and the value of money. And once it's created in a fake sense, the thing that gives it perpetual value is pumping barrels of oil through it. And that's why the Middle East is having such a big problem right now, because they're sitting on gigantic oil reserves, which gives them power, sovereign power, to do whatever the hell they want, spread their religion, whatever. That is why, since, you know, was it General Clark or whatever his name is, you know, after 9/11, he said, we're taking over seven countries, Syria being one of them. So the two holdouts are Iran and Syria. Well, Iran just got paid $1.3 billion. By the Obama administration, so we could put some missiles across the top. Who knows what's in that deal? No one had a chance to read it until it was already done, and I'm not sure we're allowed to read the rest of it due to security reasons, right? It's not a fun subject, but we have to understand that pedophilia and child trafficking and human trafficking is a massive problem in this world, not just America. We have to be able to have these conversations so that we can secure our citizens and catch those that would do this and eradicate the gene pool that thinks that this is okay. But to put the very, very final point on this particular discussion, I want you to use the word pop culture in a lot of your conversations as to why we are all screwed up. Right? When you see people worship these musicians who are absolutely, you know, the devil incarnate in terms of moral fiber and moral vectors that will corrupt our children and corrupt our adults. Because kids become adults very quickly, right? I mean, Christ, a child's a child until, what, they're 18 years old. At 21, they have all the rights that anyone else has. Well, for those of you who are adults, you know that those 10 years go by really, really fast from that sweet little 11-year-old kid all the way up to 21. At 21... they've got 10 concentrated, compact years of pop culture because you have to go off and work. And you don't want your kid to be viewed as, you know, unpopular, so you shove the cell phones and the game units into their face. It's what you do at Christmas, right? I don't have the opportunity to go back and re-educate my kid. My kid actually wasn't interested in a lot of that stuff, thank God. But she has her own batch of stuff that's in that pool. But if I had a chance to do it all over again, I'd probably be extremely honest with my kid and start to wake them up. You know, the John Carpenter movie, They Live, that would be the sort of inbred education I would give to my kid. And I assume that I wouldn't have to fixate on it that much. You just sort of wake your kid up, and then your kid gets to live in the real world, and they get to be, again, they get to 21 without being had by everything, you know? I think there are reasons to fight wars. I do. I just don't think we've had one for, you know, a few hundred years. Now, the other thing is, you might feel obligated to save the entire world as a human being, as one human being. If you think you have a technique to do that, then do it. Create a YouTube channel. Talk like I'm talking. Do your thing. Help people understand perspectives that you have every single day that you don't seem to find in other people. And then eventually it'll spread like a frequency. But don't worry, if all you can do is improve yourself and perhaps your closest family members and friends, really, you have to understand there's an exponential sort of fission reaction when that happens, right? You can help one person, and they'll help two or 10. a friend of mine just did a job interview, and he was sort of, it's been a long time since he had a job interview. He still has a job. He just found a better one that he wants to apply for, and they love him. They absolutely were on him in a heartbeat, but he went around, and he had the wherewithal. He's a brilliant guy, multilingual, and he said he went to interview like everyone he could that he thought would have something, and he bumped into me at the smoke lounge, and he goes, you know, I meant to ask you a few questions about this, and I kind of learned about a situation, and I gave him four or five tricks that I use to get a job, and all of it's in the episode in season one of How to Get a Job. And he looked at me, and he was like, oh my God, yeah, I'd never even thought about that. Those are great points, because it took the insecurities and his soft spots in the interview and made them strengths. And so far, so good. He's on to the next interview. I know you feel me. I know you have ideas. Again, people don't come at this straight up because I think we fear the preaching element to the whole equation. You know, don't preach to me, man, blah, 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 whatever. Some of you are beyond that and you want to hear everyone's opinion about this. So these are my opinions about this. Please share yours. If you do know of videos that do talk about this kind of stuff, please link them down below. I just want to thank those of you who have helped me harvest links into the bottom. One of you helped me out with some links to the actual products I mentioned in the toxins episode when I mentioned the vitamins that you take. Someone went up there to Amazon and linked them. It's beautiful. And so that helps out. I really appreciate it. This is a community effort. I really thank you guys for being there. For those of you who are interested in season one, I want to put a fine point on this because I posted it on the Facebook group. Again, the Facebook page is going away. The group is locked. Come on in. If you're going to watch season one and you want to see the video of it and you're in a foreign country especially and you're seeing that these are blocked, you try to push play and it doesn't work, understand you can go to vid.me. It's a new YouTube out there. It's growing. It's typically really short content on vid.me, but I've talked with the people that own the company and they've allowed me to have a premium account where I can post these videos, which are very, very long. And it's been a really good response over there, but they don't block the videos just because a fragment of a song is being played. They know there's no copyright violation there. I'm not playing an entire song. I'm playing just a few seconds of it. So if you want to see season one in its pristine condition, I did redo the first, I think, 7 or 8 videos because the intros were pretty mild. And one of them was labeled wrong in terms of what number it was. So I cleaned them all, cleaned the first dozen up. But if you want to see them all, go to vid.me. That's all you need to know on that one. DeepThoughtsRadio.com for all the feeds. If you're on video, there's audio. If you're on audio, there's video. That's all you need to know. Thanks for listening. I will see you in the next episode. Take care of yourself and someone else. Over now.